Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Treathart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that dances to its own rhythm, be it the rhymes of Bruce Springsteen, that would be Mary Pat, the Beatles, that would be Nathan, or U2, yours truly. Music and dance are the central focus of one of the most traditional of movie genres, the musical, a format that Lin-Manuel Miranda has demonstrated a talent for both on stage and on screen in Hamilton and now In the Heights. We three will discuss what we like about In the Heights, and then we'll run down a few of our choices for worthy movie musicals, some of which, whether we're talking about Busby Berkeley, Bob Fosse, Tony Basil, or any of today's young choreographers, may not show up on your basic best-of lists. Let's begin this week's show by heading to the New York City neighborhood of Washington Heights. Some 16 years before he would rocket to international fame with the 2015 Broadway musical Hamilton, Lin-Manuel Miranda was still a student at Wesleyan University. That was when he wrote his first draft of the project that would become In the Heights, which would eventually premiere on Broadway in 2009. Now, thanks to director John M. Chu, In the Heights has moved to the big screen with Hamilton cast member Anthony Ramos in the lead as the owner of a bodega in Washington Heights who fantasizes about living on a beach in the Dominican Republic. A virtual companion piece to West Side Story, the 1961 film that Miranda helped revive on Broadway in 2009, In the Heights is a look at barrio existence in its various forms, from the homesick Stanford student, played by Leslie Grace, to the worker bee employee in a car service company, played by Corey Hawkins, to the barrio elder, the abuela, played by Olga Meredes. While boasting nowhere near as straightforward a storyline as Hamilton, In the Heights does have the same kind of rap lyric mix, energetic music, and choreography, and it all works in the service of defining what it means to dream of a better life.
It's interesting that you brought up West Side Story because we're about to get another big screen version of West Side Story
I'm
at the end of this year with
Steven
Spielberg behind the camera. And I think that this movie, In the Heights, and its original show, of course, plays, I think, less like a companion piece and more of a repudiation almost to West Side Story, especially in its sense of casting. I mean, I think we've had a lot more conversations about diversity on the screen and who should be cast in what roles. And of course, looking back at West Side Story, there's some people that were playing parts of that movie that would not get cast today. Let's
George
say that.
Karras.
Yeah, Natalie Wood. But I think that this movie, unlike West Side Story, it is another story about the immigrant experience, but it's done in a much more quotidian way, which might seem kind of silly to talk about a movie that has giant, splashy, Busby Berkeley-inspired musical numbers, but this really is a movie about hanging on to your own history and your own cultural identity as gentrification kind of creeps into your neighborhood and, you know, desperately tries to strip that away, but also sort of about the dreams that these people have and whether or not they think they can ever capture them. You know, the fact that the Anthony Ramos character wants to move back to the Dominican Republic and he wants to give up his bodega, but he's also worried that if he does that, then the hub of the neighborhood is going to go away.
Which it's slightly going away anyway, because some of the people are moving out. Daniela, the character, who's going to move her beauty salon to, I guess, Manhattan, right, Mary Pat?
Well, yeah, she's going to the West Village, I think.
Right. Well, and then you have the Leslie Grace character who is going to Stanford. And so everyone in her old neighborhood kind of looks at her as this star that has escaped the barrio, so to speak, and is out in the big world. And she still feels like an outsider. She doesn't feel welcomed at Stanford, and she doesn't want her father, played by the great Jimmy Smits, to keep paying her way through school because he might have to shut down his business. So there are all of these kind of interpersonal storylines going on. And then you have the musical numbers, which maybe we can talk about. And some of them are great. I really liked the one at the public pool where they're all singing about possibly winning the lottery. Everyone's constantly buying scratch-off tickets because that's another dream they have, that maybe they'll strike it rich and they can no one wants to strike it rich for their own benefit. They want to help all of their family members and friends, you know, also kind of escape poverty. And then there's the one with Abuela, who is kind of remembering her childhood in the Dominican Republic and the struggles to get to America. And I think that's probably my favorite moment in the movie. If I had a complaint about In the Heights in terms of the way that it is made as a screen musical, John Chu, of course, came from the Step Up movies. He made a couple of the Justin Bieber concert films and then, of course, made Crazy Rich Asians, which was a huge hit. He's a former dancer himself. And I think that he is more beholden to the conventions of music video editing and cutting than he is to old-fashioned musical cutting and editing. There are scenes where we have giant groups of dancers all choreographed, and I feel like there's maybe too many edits, too many cuts on the beat, too many medium shots and close-up shots where I sometimes wish that I could see everybody's bodies moving, you know, in harmony with one another. So I do sort of wish that this did have almost more of an old-fashioned visual feel to it, because there is a lot of that kind of hyperkinetic music video cutting. But for the most part, I was not familiar with the show going into the movie. I know, Dan, you saw it on stage. I didn't. But I really enjoyed this, and it's 2.5 hours almost. Mm-hmm. But for me, it really flew by. And I think a lot of that has to do with the cast and the energy. Mm-hmm. And of course, Lin-Manuel Miranda's music, mm-hmm. Which we now it's instantly recognizable now,
yes,
because of
exactly.
Hamilton. But
exactly.
It's interesting to hear, you know, where that style kind of originated.
Yeah, I didn't see it on Broadway, but I did see it in Solvang, California, which that's not very far from L.A. And so you got all these out of work L.A. actors looking for work. So there was talent on the stage. And I think we need to point out that this is not Hamilton. Hamilton, the movie was Hamilton, was just a shot of the stage play, whereas John Chu opens up this, you know, opens up. So it is shot in the real Washington Heights. It's shot on location. And I think that the one big problem, I agree with you about some of the choreography. It just seemed to me a little busy at points. Mm-hmm. And we can talk about this in the second half when we talk about, obviously we'll have to talk about Busby Berkeley a little bit in terms of musicals. But I think the main problem I had with this is that, unlike Hamilton, which was built on a book and it had a clear narrative, and unlike, say, even West Side Story, which was built upon the play Romeo and Juliet, Shakespeare, has a clear narrative. To me, there was no clear narrative. It was a mishmash of stories and experiences. I prefer something that is much more, I'm going from A to B to C, even if it's A to C to B to D, E, F, it can be out of whack. It doesn't make any difference. But I had to just say, well, I can't really relate to the story here, so I'm going to relate to the experience and to the performances. And I got to say, I love Anthony Ramos. This kid can do anything. We've been watching him on the new In Treatment HBO series, and he is just fabulous. What did you think, Mary Pat?
I think that you both have sort of keyed on the important parts about this. I have to say, I'm not a huge musical fan. And so for whatever reason, maybe it just arrived at the right time. Go back, see it in the Dolby Sound Cinema, big screen. I thought this is just what we needed at this particular time. And it's interesting because I really liked the choreography in this musical. I mean, I agree, there's a lot going on. And if you see it on TV, maybe it would be overwhelming. But I really appreciated that. The other thing that I liked about it is the fact that there wasn't a narrative, that there were all these things sort of, you know, showing up at different points, and they were hitting on relationships and social justice issues and generational divides, but nothing was overemphasized. I think my only critique of this as a musical generally is I don't think it has that one song that gives it a hook in some way. I mean, you know, when you think like sort of overall, the choreography and the music is great, but it's not like
you can still hum songs from West Side Story.
Well, right.
All these
right.
years later.
I mean, and so I think that that would be the only flaw that I would, you know, maybe bring up with respect to it.
I bet you there are a lot of musical theater fans screaming at their radios right now, being like, what about this song? This is the hook from the movie.
Well,
this
is the
memorable.
Thing is,
we're just not as familiar with the music.
Right. I liked almost all of the songs, but none of them resonated for me later. That's what
I could
I'm
sing
saying.
You In the Heights, the title song,
right,
if you want.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
We'll do that in the second half.
We could all hum pretty much the whole themes of Hamilton. That played in our house with our grandchildren singing right along with the lyrics. So
right. The one thing I did appreciate was the fact that the female characters were their own people from Abuela to the girl who's at Stanford to the woman who owns the hair salon and so forth.
Played by Daphne Rubin Vega from the original cast of Rent.
Exactly. And so that's another thing. And some of these characters were in the original Broadway show. And I think that always enhances things. But Dan, I agree with you 100%. I think Anthony Ramos is amazing. So he was Philip Hamilton in Hamilton. He actually played two parts in Hamilton.
Yes, he did.
But yeah, he's an amazing screen presence. And Jimmy Smits, I really like seeing him because I don't think that we appreciate fully his range of talents. And he had the opportunity
more
to
Jimmy
showcase
Smits.
Them.
Yeah, I agree. Smits. Well, and I think we'd be remiss if we didn't bring up sort of the dominant narrative that's been surrounding In the Heights, although I think we talked off mic that maybe we're not the right people to bring this up in detail. But of course, there have been some criticisms about the colorism that some have leveled at the casting, at least of the main players in this. I would highly suggest that you look at a New York Times article that ran a couple of days ago about this. A.O. Scott facilitated a discussion with some Latinx critics and writers that says a lot more than we ever could. But I do think that there are some legitimate criticisms there. It's also too bad that the only blockbuster of the year that is anchored by an entirely Latinx cast is sort of held to this standard that other movies aren't. But I do think that we have a long way to go in terms of casting in Hollywood. And this is more of a Hollywood problem, I think, than it is an In the Heights problem. But I think those criticisms are valid and you should definitely read up on that.
Yeah. Step by step by step.
Yep.
And that was In the Heights. This is Movies 101 and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to run down some of our favorite movie musicals from years past. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed the movie musical In the Heights. Let's continue talking about music, dance, and movies by listing some of our favorite musicals in film history. Beginning with the use of organs that would accompany early theatrical screenings of silent films, music has always been important to cinema. While MGM is best known as the studio that offered up the best of what became an actual movie genre, all studios got into the act. And over the course of the 20th century and into the first two decades of the 21st, that act has continued. What with the opening of Lin-Manuel Miranda's In the Heights, which was directed by John Chu, the three of us thought that we would offer a few of what we consider to be our favorite Scream musicals. And, you know, first of all, I think we have to designate the difference between a movie musical and movies with music. One of the movies on my list is the 1964 film by Jacques Demy, starring Catherine Deneuve and Nino Castelnuovo, called The Umbrellas of Cherbourg. And in that movie, that is a pure movie musical. Every line of dialogue is sung. And it, on first viewing, I thought, what the hell is this? This is strange. On the second viewing, I went, this is a masterpiece of a film. So that is one of the films off my list. Other films on my list, Dancer in the Dark, 2000 by Lars von Trier, Cabaret, 1972 by Bob Fosse, Once, 2007 by John Carney, and 42nd Street, the great 42nd Street, 1933, directed by Lloyd Bacon and featuring the choreography of the great Busby Berkeley.
I think it's funny that I just want to point out that you just threw Dancer in the Dark in there like that's, you know, like
well,
it's West Side Story or something.
That's because we're going to come back to it because that is the wildest, weirdest, strangest. And, of course, you expect that from Lars von Trier.
And depressing. But, well, and it also doesn't become a musical until like halfway through the runtime. It just sort of starts breaking into song. I also tend to gravitate towards the more unusual movie musicals, of course. We talked about Singin' in the Rain off mic and decided no one needs to be recommended Singin' in the Rain again. It is the great movie musical. If you had to show someone one movie musical to explain what the genre is all about, you would show them Singin' in the Rain.
Yes.
And so I love old-fashioned splashing musicals like that. But the ones that I tend to gravitate towards are the ones that sort of use the musical form to kind of break rules, both in terms of subject matter, but also in terms of the medium of film and how that works. So one of the ones that I wanted to talk about is another Bob Fosse film, which is All That Jazz from 1979, starring Roy Scheider as a fictionalized version of Bob Fosse. And what I love about that movie is that it uses musical numbers within the context of the setting, which is, you know, Broadway and auditions. So you see people performing as they really would in real life. But then it descends into sort of this bizarre fantasy world where the Bob Fosse avatar is sort of imagining his own death and what the world is going to do about it once he dies. And then also what the people on the other side are going to do. Mm-hmm. So you have Ben Vereen as sort of this,
right,
you know, singing, dancing embodiment of death. And then Jessica Lange.
It was the movie that revived Jessica Lange's career after King Kong. I mean, she plays the angel that he sees in a fantasy.
Right.
And that, you know.
And so that movie, I think, is one of the greats, sort of one of the great meta musicals, in the sense that it's commenting on the form of the musical, but it's also kind of dissecting the people that make musicals.
Yes.
And if you haven't seen All That Jazz, if you're put off by it because you thought it was like about Roxy Hart in Chicago or something, it's one of my all-time
favorite
movies.
In fact, we should go back and do an entire show on Bob Fosse himself.
Yeah,
what a
career that guy had.
Mary Pat?
Well, even though I live in the same household with one of the co-hosts, I think I got my assignment wrong. So what I was doing is I was looking at musicals that I had seen performed on stage and then comparing those to the movies.
I like this idea.
And mm-hmm. so the ones that I came up with and sort of better, worse portrayals, Grease. I think, again, I didn't see that one on Broadway, so I can't comment, but I think the movie musical is great. I think that John Travolta.
If you like Grease, yes.
Well, okay, but that's what I'm looking at.
Well, John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John are slightly more talented than the people that did my high school production of Grease.
Oh, like, really?
Just a little bit more.
Okay, wait a minute. Just because I got the assignment wrong doesn't mean you're going to dump on me.
Sorry.
Okay.
Moving on.
Okay, Rent.
Rent.
Amazing Broadway production.
Amazing
traveling show. Lousy movie. I don't know why that. Even some of the same people were in it, but it just didn't work. Okay. Something that did work. Sweeney Todd, which I happened to see on Broadway. And Tim Burton made that into an amazing movie musical on the screen. Okay. Annie. Wonderful Broadway show. For the time, et cetera, et cetera. But the movie was horrible.
I like the movie.
Okay.
My daughter loved the movie, too.
Yeah, so. I saw it when I was a kid.
She was like 5 years old.
You have Carol Burnett. You have Tim Curry, Bernadette Peters, Albert Finney, Anne Reinking, who was also in All That Jazz.
Okay. So I have two more. One, Chicago. Great movie.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. You know, as a stage production. And then the final one is Les Mis. People love to hate that musical.
And the movie.
But when performed live, I think it is pretty compelling, whereas the movie was ick. I think that, I think
we're going to have people yelling at the radio.
I know. Well, isn't that what we want?
Yeah,
we
want.
But please, if you're driving in your car, please no accidents, okay? Yeah.
10 and 2
yeah,
on the wheel.
If you're driving to the lake, like, you know.
Eyes open.
Right, exactly. So that's, and I guess the last one that I had come up with is Dreamgirls, because I had seen that performed back in the 80s. And I really did think Jennifer Hudson probably made the film version.
Did any of us see West Side Story on stage? I didn't see it on
stage.
Not a
professional production.
But the 1961 movie, I went with a bunch of kids, and I had to stay afterward while they left because I was crying at the end of that movie. But then that was me at 14. So, you know.
Can I bring up another one of my favorite kind of offbeat movie musicals, because it's one that I've cherished for a long time, and I think I've brought it up on the show a handful of times. And I know for a fact that my co-host happened to watch it last night for the first time ever.
No, I saw it when it first came out.
Okay, well, that would be Phantom of the Paradise, Brian De Palma's 1974 film, which is a riff both on Phantom of the Opera and Faust.
And Dorian Gray.
And Dorian Gray,
That's a good point, yes. And it's also sort of a musical satire of the music industry and sort of the fad-based industry of the 1970s in particular. And because it's Brian De Palma, it's darkly funny. It's filled with weird references to Alfred Hitchcock and Psycho. It has an eye-catching color palette, lots of bright reds and dark blacks. And the music is by Paul Williams, who is in the movie as basically the devil in the form of a record impresario.
And he's the singer. He sings all the songs.
Yeah.
Except what isn't sung by Jessica Harper.
Jessica Harper sings one of the main numbers. And what I love about this movie is that, well, first of all, I should say that it was a huge flop when it came out in 74.
Yes.
De Palma righted his career immediately afterward by directing Carrie, which was a huge hit. So imagine going from Phantom of the Paradise to Carrie. Totally weird. Funnily enough, was a massive hit in Winnipeg. And apparently they still have like Phantom of the Paradise, like festivals and group gatherings in Winnipeg.
Because it's sort of like a Rocky Horror Picture Show kind of.
And it's from the same
experience.
Era.
Right. And I think that, yeah, I was not.
To bring up a movie that is so much better.
Right.
Well,
I was not down with Phantom of the Paradise until Garrett Graham shows up as Beef. And that's the name of his character. I don't know. I mean, I definitely
think he's not Meatloaf. That's for
no,
sure.
No, that's
right.
For sure.
I definitely think this movie lends itself to some mind altering substances as accompaniment.
That's probably true.
Just putting it out
there.
Well,
I've probably seen it upwards of 30 times, so I cannot.
Oh my goodness.
I cannot separate the logical, critical faculties with my love for it. So, your mileage may vary. I do know that both Edgar Wright and Daft Punk are big fans of that movie and have referenced it in their own work.
Yeah. Well, before we go, I wanted to refer back to 42nd Street, the 1933 film, because it has one of the great lines of all movie musicals ever. And that's when Warner Baxter, who plays Julian Marsh, the stage manager of this play that's being put on, he tells Ruby Dee, the character Peggy Sawyer by Ruby Dee, he says, because she has to go out because the main person who she's going to have to replace broke her ankle on opening night. So she has to go out. And he says, Sawyer, you're going out a youngster, but you've got to come back a star. What a great
line. Funnily enough, that's what Dan says to me before every recording of this show.
And look how well that's turned out for everyone.
Here's a confession. You had never seen Phantom of the Paradise. I've never seen 42nd Street. So I'll have to correct that.
Oh, yeah.
You saw
a
classic. No. Sort of classic. I'll see it.
A cult film. Yeah. We saw a cult film.
An actual classic.
And with that, it's time to say ciao. This is Movies 101 back in the studio. I'm Dan Webster, and early in the show, Nathan Weinbinder, Murray Pat Truthart, and I discussed the movie musical In the Heights. Let's take this moment to thank Peter Glarberg for both producing and engineering the show. We thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer wherever we can find it. Until then, remember these words from none other than Friedrich Nietzsche. And those who were seen dancing were thought to be insane by those who could not hear the music. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.